I'm Dick Goodwin, sometimes known as Richard Goodwin.
All right, Richard Good or Dick, as you prefer. As you know, today we're talking about Schaefer, Francis Schaefer. And we're talking with people who knew Schaefer or heard Schaefer and whose lives were affected by the man and his message. So, to begin with, if you would tell me what, under what occasion you met Schaefer and heard him, and were you a Christian at the time or not?
Right. The first thing is that I met him through letter, first of all, rather than physically. And I'll just put that into context. I was already a Christian, having become a Christian through Transworld Radio, and I was at teacher training college and wondering whether to become a progressive teacher or a traditional teacher, and people quite rightly said, well, pray about it. But I thought, well, what would the answer look like? I'd been to a conference and there was this book, Escape from Reason, and I thought, oh, I don't want to jump on this bandwagon. Oh, my goodness me. But then I read it, and because my major then was history, it made sense of what I was learning and the philosophy of education. Secondly, I then read the Labrie story, and because I'd like Switzerland, I'd only been there once before, I thought, this is more than just ideas. So I had various ideas, including personal ideas, and I was coming towards the end of my course, and I thought, well, where shall I go coming out of university and graduating? Where shall I go and teach? But I wrote to Schaefer with my questions, and can't hear it on the tape, but here is the original letter, which you can take a copy of. And so he directed me to Ranald Macaulay, who was just about leaving the work in London, to go to start the work in the English countryside in Hampshire. But the thing that strikes me about the letter is the way it's written. A, I didn't realise then too that there was many people he was answering to. But he sort of says, you know, I wish I could sit down and have a cup of tea with you, or you could come out, maybe that's so, or I'm just about to go off, I think it's to Florence, to do a series of studies, but you take time to dictate and send that letter. So I did go up in the end to visit work in London, and that was in January, so the following September I went up there and made that place my local church for the next 2.5 years. So that's where I first came across him. So there was the two things then. One were the ideas. So I was then beginning to think I was reading all this secular philosophy, but here was Christians can do philosophy. And then also the other, the community aspect. I know we're talking about just Francis Schaefer, but the idea that, you know, in the church, I've been there a couple of weeks and I knew people's first names, but never their last name. Mm-hmm. And just that sort of thing was there. So that was my first. And seeing him come into, it was called 52 Cleveland Road, that was the name of the place. Often they would call in on their way back from Heathrow before they would fly out to Geneva and that. And just the both of them answering questions. I think that's the key thing, if I'm answering questions, taking people seriously. That'll come up again. I remember him answering questions and then seeing somebody go out the door and he just, hang on a minute, and go and have a word with them. I was outside already, so I wasn't sure why, but it was obviously something he didn't want that person to leave with a misimpression or something. And so that struck me. I then, years later, went and visited just a weekend and that out in Swiss Labrie, and he was doing the Saturday night discussions, which are the famous ones, and he would sit up on that fireplace and have his vacuum flask, thermos flask of tea, and he'd just say, I wish everybody could have a cup of tea, but you don't mind me if I have mine. Has anybody got a question? Well, one question led to an evening's answer. So again, it's that accepting people where they were, taking their question, You must have heard them many times before. I find it very hard myself, having been a teacher, not to just jump in and say, well, I think you're fine, but no, to go through with it, that person. The next sort of flash that comes into my mind is that there was two conferences they had down in Sussex, Labrie conferences, the Ashburnham conference. This was the second one. And in the dining hall, there were tables like this and people all seated around it. And I was a table away from Schaefer. And of course, everybody's saying, Dr. Schaefer, Dr. Schaefer. They never published when he was speaking. So people turned up for that, nobody else. And everybody's saying, Dr. Schaefer. And suddenly this little girl comes up with this other little girl and says, are you really Fiona's granddad? And the beaming on his face to think, oh, I'm known for being Fiona's granddad rather than Dr. Schaefer. So that's another, it's the humanity as well that comes through. The next sort of glimpse of seeing him at work, I think, was in Westminster Central Hall. They'd shown How Shall We Then Live throughout the churches in England. Then whatever happened to the human race? And they thought, well, on the back of that, because that got a lot more response, they would relaunch How Shall We Then Live. So Ranald and Dr. Schaefer relaunched it up in the Westminster Central Hall in London there. And they spoke and they showed two episodes. Now, this was must have been, well, I mean, it was after whatever happened to human race, so he was already ill now. We're talking about the 80s. And they showed an episode on the Reformation. And somebody across the aisle from me got up afterwards with a question and said, Dr. Schaefer, I think you got us here under false pretenses. We've cooperated with you as Catholics on whatever happened to the human race, and now you show something on the Reformation. And Schaefer just said, well, as I understand it, the biblical view is we do nothing to merit the merit of Christ. And that was just before lunch. Other questions went on. As soon as lunch, he finished for lunch, he was off of the podium, because I was sitting there, came down to this person, said, let's talk about this. Now, whether he spent the whole lunchtime with him, he was ill, perhaps he had medication, he had probably had other people lined up who he had to see during his lunch hour, but he was not there to win arguments, but had a concern for people. I suppose the other, then teaching in a school, which in England we call the grammar school, which I suppose is a sort of pre-university type schools, it's ones are all going to go probably onto university. I showed How Shall We Then Live, and it was a state school, and then took a group of people from our church and the school to see the live event of whatever happened to the human race, where he was answering questions. But it's interesting that just fairly recently, somebody who I'm not sure what their spiritual standing is, said the thing that made me think, he said, all those years back, so we're talking end of 70s, when he said, I hope I quote it right, if there is no absolute by which to judge society, society is absolute, he said, no, it made me think there must be a God. So that, he always remembered that phrase. And then I remember later telling people that when he died, and they said, was that the series of films we watched, The Man with the Sad Eyes? And I thought, that's what struck them, a man who, that just encapsulated the compassion and that sort of thing. Yes. And then just recently, I've heard from, I can't think who it was, might have been from Barry talking about it, but somebody pointed out that Schaefer, and I've been connected with Labrie since then, but Schaefer never told somebody they were wrong. And I'd never realised that. He'd always said, well, if that's where you're starting from, let's see where it leads. And then so the legacy of Schaefer, a lot of people say, well, is it still in the 60s Labrie or what's happening? I said, well, the actual Francis Schaefer legacy, I said, is probably seen elsewhere now. It's in the churches that have got creative forms of whatever creativity, art or that sort of thing. It's in people seeing the Lordship of Christ in every area of life. I was at a conference just this last Saturday and some teachers were talking about whatever subject we teach, it's always value-laden, as if this was some idea they'd hit upon. You know, nothing's neutral. And I thought, no, you're getting that idea from way, way back. Schaefer had said it. And how also the other thing is how the ideas in philosophy lead their way down into you know, people in the street and that sort of thing. So I think that people often question me and said, oh, you know, he was a very populist person. And I said, yeah, in some ways that's true. He claimed to be an evangelist rather than a philosopher. I said, but there were, you know, they said there were other people doing these studies in seminary. And I said, yeah, but nobody'd heard of them. They're still kept in the seminary.
Yes.
And the universities, and he met the people where they were and then gave us the framework for thinking. And yes. I think in all the other studies I've done since then, I think, yeah, I have a framework in which to approach everything else. So I would say Lordship of Christ, creativity, and also truth, which I think is important for the church, not just for the world to hear. That,
yes.
It's got to be based on the truth, if we can come back to that.
And since Schaefer was dealing here in Europe with, you know, there was a pretty strong movement, probably I could say it stronger than that, of existentialism. Mm. And so for Schaefer to stand up and speak about what he called true truth, that there was a reality that was independent of the mind, and hence it was the truth that was grounded in that reality, must have just been a earth-shaking.
Yes. I mean, I just never came across it. I mean, all the other, some of the Christians that I'd read in, you know, university and that, I became a Christian, say, just before I went to university, but... there was still this compartmentalized view of study, and I think, oh, yeah. So I wanted to go back and do my studies again.
So did Schaefer's just went by modeling?
I think that, yeah.
Did you find that to help you even in your own teaching career?
Oh, yes. I think one, to say, was the truth. Secondly, would try to gather a framework for thinking, you know, rather than just counter, well, I think that's true today, rather than counter arguments with perhaps proof texts or even that sort of thing, you say, no, this is a framework, we may not know each bit in between, but this is how we join the dots up and we can now start to understand things. So to give that as a valuable tool for students. And the other one is the questioning, which again has been modelled by other people, you know, since then in Labrie. I think both Schaefer, that time I saw him in Waymo, and people when I was in London, Dick Kyes of the Southborough, Labrie was the pastor there then, and Jerome Bars, who's now at Covenant. It was to, I think I learned more in how to teach by hearing them answer questions, because I'd think, this is how I'd answer it then, think, mm-hmm. Oh, now you've gone down that way. Ah, I see why you've gone that. Yeah. You've listened below what's being said. Mm-hmm. And again, at this, whatever happened to the human race, the first, not the one I told this story about before, but the other one where it was a live event where he was with Everett Koop and that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was somebody from a colleague from school who was a philosophy teacher, and all the students thought, on what questions he going to ask, you see. And, but it wasn't, you know, again, he wasn't scoring points, Schaefer, but he just sat there and he said, well, actually, I think the question you're asking is two questions. We mustn't confuse them. I mean, some of the students are... But it was a way of saying, just let's boil it down to what is actually you're asking. When we see what's been asked, then we can answer. And I think that's the key, seeing what somebody really is asking. And that's where I think his sadness, his compassion, he could see almost in the eyes perhaps of the other person, whether it's just a more or less an intellectual thing or really there was a passion in the soul sort of thing of that person that had a struggle. And,
do you think the sadness in the eye, which is an interesting thought, it comes from, at least maybe in part, for Schaefer's sense of almost weeping for humanity, for where humanity is without the gospel. And he saw that not just as a soul to win, you know, you can put it you can put it on some kind of a card and
say, this is
what we just did, but because he just realized apart from that there wasn't any hope. So as you were in his presence, what comes across or what came across when you were in Schaefer's presence?
The word intensity comes to mind, but it doesn't see it as a sort of stressful intensity. I think it's a focusing, a concentration. I think he's bringing all together his thinking, his spirituality, his theology, his compassion, and he's being present for that person.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Without forgetting all the others, because I think you can have a lot of people very present and compassionate without saying, hang on, there's truth back here somewhere. But he's bringing all that as it applies to that person, where they are at that time in that situation. I think that's what comes across.
I've read, because I never heard Schaefer in person. Yes, I did. I heard him in person once. And that was about 3 weeks before he died, when he was doing a tour on the book, The Great Evangelical Disaster.
Like the tour.
I've never been able to find that particular video, but so I did, but I've heard him or read where he would say, when you're looking at the person before you, don't first think of a sinner, but first think of a human being. And that was very powerful to me as one who, you know, wanted to share the gospel with Christ, with other people. But to see them first as a human being, that's the one thing we shared in common.
I think that's interesting you say that, because I nearly thought of saying something else, and I thought that doesn't actually come straight from Schaefer. It comes from somebody who's been at Le Brie recently. But they were saying the thing that they noticed about Le Brie is the emphasis on that the fall is an aberration of what we were. Let's go back to creation, the dignity of man. And I think that's true, especially in the conversation I've had was often about, you know, with where we've got all the confusion about sexuality and that today. Mm-hmm. We have to start with not the sin.
That's right.
Because sin is only sort of parasitic on the, on the truth, but we have to go back and realise people are created in God's image. So I think that, yes, that would have been something he would have talked about.
This idea that, as you speak about creation, this idea that Christianity give an answer to why we see man doing such ugly things, and at the same time being able to do such beautiful things and compassionate
ruins
things.
Phrase,
that's right.
It is.
And you see, it was there all the time. For those of us who'd studied theology, it was there all the time. Nobody had put it like that. That's what catches me.
Yeah.
He'd thought about it and then, well, how do we say this? What does this mean for...
That's right, and he had these odd phrases that, but they made you remember them. But I mean, he did put it into non-proper philosophical jargon, but it communicated, even if he had to explain it first of all, at least. And I think, too, looking at the roots, you know, we'll say, he took this from Clark, he took this from Kuyper, he took this from Doyle, he took this from Van Til and that. But he wasn't there to... I was going to say, he wasn't there to be a sort of Calvin and to write his institutes. He was there as a Luther, responding to the day's situation. And
That's right. People have tried to tie him to Duivier, maybe, or Kuiper. Yeah. But, you know, there's a letter that we have in which he says, no, he had not been, he did not read Duivier. Now, does it mean that he wasn't influenced as he's, you know, maybe at Westminster or something, but they got it from Duivier, didn't say that or whatever.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, just, you know, and sometimes you can see this idea, at least with the framework that we would have, that, you know, the Lordship of Christ. Every area of life, every legitimate area
that's
of life,
right. Yeah.
belongs to the Lord, and we need to treat it in that fashion.
That's right. That, and I say, I think, again, in reading just, I mean, it started me reading these other people, about the importance of presuppositions.
Yes, and for Schaefer, a presupposition was wasn't something that you didn't question.
That's right, yeah.
It could be a starting point in the conversation, but then you had to figure out, well, does this presupposition hold any water?
Where
does it lead you if you hold this?
That's what he used. But again, it led to this idea of no neutrality, and so
yes,
we can be bold in the marketplace of learning to hold to one where the presupposition is God exists and has revealed himself, rather than just working our way up to God being the end point there.
Yes. Now you get this letter from Schaefer.
You're right, yes.
Okay, and this letter is in the 1970.
70, yeah.
And you're asking Schaefer about what to do next?
I think one was to ask him about the quandary I had about education, what sort of teacher to be. And then there was the personal question about sovereignty and free will. So I included the two. Just talking to Randall now, he said, oh yes, I remember you coming up and asking that. But I thought, where there was a place that was going to give me answers.
Yes.
Because as I said before, if I prayed about whether to be progressive or traditional, that's right, but what would an answer look like? Would just see it written or and that sort of thing. And so, and again, I think this is another thing with Schaefer, which was quite comforting. If I didn't know the answer to a question, there were people who did know. And, to be humble and realise that, and comfort to know there are people who have thought these things through. Because again, if you went to, nothing against the small little churches, for not because they're small, but perhaps not into, well, even if they were into studies and that sort of thing, and made this sort of separation between the secular work and there were Christians in secular area. So I'm thinking, well, I want a satisfactory answer that's going to tie the two together, sort of a Christian view of things rather than just a Christian gloss on it. And so
this letter, though we have it in front of us, it's a page long, it's single-spaced, typed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you wrote to Schaefer, he knew who you were?
Nope. Not at all. Just, I must have said I read the books and something like that. I mean, this was to get an answer, first of all. I thought I might get, I don't know what I would have got. This was the day before emails and everything else. But I might have got, I don't know, just come and visit or even a catalogue of the tapes, because I listened to the tapes and that. But it was that, and signed by him, that is his signature.
And you say it was the day before emails, and I say, well, we can be grateful it was, because if it had been an email, it would have been preserved, would it?
No, that's right, yeah.
Lewis, C.S. Lewis, who did so much writing, and I think, oh, well, what will happen today?
Mm.
Everybody's shooting off an email here and there.
That's right.
I do it, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
What may be at the end, are we going to have lost something? I mean, I suppose people could print off the email, but they're probably more likely to delete it.
Yeah, I did have. I just remembered on before coming up here, I had got a second letter, which must have been about 78 or something, which was still on the airmail paper. I think after I'd written to him and said that obviously I'd been through Lubbery sort of thing up and moved away, where I eventually moved away and taught, but was showing the films in a state school, and you just wrote back and acknowledged that and sort of thing. So, I mean, again, it was... So he was even more busy in those days.
Yes.
It was a shorter letter, but it was a...
It amazes me that LaBrie starts roughly in the spring of 1955. Mm-hmm. 1960, Time Magazine carries an article on Schaefer, and speaks of him as being a missionary to the European intellectual.
That's right, yeah.
Now, that's pretty amazing. In those days, it was in Time, and that within 5 years after LaBrie.
That's right, yeah, well, it's not until, but that's interesting you say that a bit later, that I found this. That he was interviewed in 1970 for an English evangelical newspaper, so that was even a longer gap there.
Yes, yeah.
Is he the latest fad? Uh-huh. Was he pulling a monstrous confidence trick on us all?
Some people might have thought it a fad, but the truth of the matter is, stood the test of time, hasn't it?
That's right, yes, yes. And it's taken a slow time in England, I think, for various reasons. I don't know, these are my own, obviously, opinions on this now. Yes. But I think one is the media was... Well, I mean, his Wheaton lectures became The God Who Is There, so there was already a... And he was American audience there. The English take their time, too, to listen to anything... You've got to have all your doctorates in line and everything else before you're heard.
But even in the States, Schaefer was not that well received early on. Now, I was a part of a evangelical group, and I became a Christian in the midst of 65.
Yeah.
And so I know late 60s, early 70s. And because Schaefer, the way he dressed, and his long hair, longer than most, I should say, that because of coming out of the 60s, those who, roughly speaking, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but the fundamentalist,
that was the group that
I belonged to.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And there were many things right about him, but at any rate, they sort of were suspicious of him. How could this be? And then I did, my first encounter with Schaefer was in the late 60s. But it was through people who had read Schaefer, and they went off into the antinomianism. So I said, if that's Schaefer, I want nothing to do with it, you know. But then later I was introduced to reading Schaefer in the late 70s, and that, of course... I said, wait a minute. somebody wasn't reading right here.
Well, it's interesting on that one about antinomianism, because I was at a very reformed colleague when I was at university. I was saying, oh, it's evangelism on evidences, you don't need that sort of thing and all that. And so I said, oh, yeah, you Calvinists. Although Ranald and Jerome called their book Christianity with a Human Face, long before that, I always said Schaefer was Calvinism with a human face. Because I think that's... I started to listen to... I mean, again, there's a wealth in terms of his studies. I mean, that's another area which perhaps people don't listen to these days. I don't know, they plough through the Westminster Confession or all the studies he's going to. And there was another series, I can't remember the title of it, where he just sort of living life forms or something like that, where he went through the Bible looking for certain themes. And I thought, yes. You have to get used to listening to the King James Version again. But
he did step off path with the Reform for the most part. Now, there were Reform people. But, you know, I don't want to say shocked, because I suspicioned it. But he held to a pre-millennial position, and which would not have been necessarily in step with a more reformed position,
right,
would tend to be. So he worked on the text and came to conclusions from the text. I mean, that sounds so trivial, I suppose, you know, and but it's, I think it just, it is true.
I think there's probably another mark of why people again say, oh, is he this camp, this camp? No, I've just been working the truth as I find it takes me to that camp. Or,
yes, yeah. Well, that's, you as a history teacher.
What to start with here?
Pardon?
To start with, then I moved to religious education, then philosophy, and
then
did counselling. And...
Well, when you think about history, how would you rate How Shall We Then Live? It just, honestly, you...
Right. I say to people, I tried to popularise Schaefer when I talk, but they say, well, my goodness me, that's popularising the popular. They're nowhere near the truth. They hear what you say. I think as an academic, and I've read the books that have critiqued him on this and probably could agree with them. But again, he was painting with a big paintbrush, and getting people to think, to stir them up, to... Is this an idea that is this, you know, this whole idea of, again, to use Duvivier in French, ground motives and all that sort of thing? Is this what's really the spirit of the age? Is this what, because if you see the spirit of the age, wherever it's defined, then you know what the questions were being asked at that time. And so I think that was always, I thought, well, you know, what were the issues at that time if this was the underlying mindset of the people? So I would always want to use it,
Well, use it as it was intended.
Yeah.
It was intended to connect the dots, to give the big picture, and few in the evangelical world, at least at that time, had even thought that way, what we call intellectual.
Yes, history. No, no, he was...
You know, connecting ideas along the way. Either. To me, that is, well, it was, you know, it was rather earth-shaking to me. He wasn't the only one who was doing it, but the film series, of course, How Shall We Then Live, and you know, if you can read something like a Richard Weaver, who wrote Ideas Have Consequences, right?
Yeah.
Which was much earlier, of course, in the States. But I thought, well, if we can look at the world and understand ideas, as Schaefer is saying, and we can do that by looking at our culture and seeing, then we have a good idea of what's being thought and where will this naturally lead if there isn't anything intervening?
That's right, yeah.
And so it was, that was terribly helpful to me.
And again, it's just the sort of questions in England you would have, like in the what we call the A-levels, or sort of pre-university, 18-year-old state school people take, you tend to leave the bottom questions you don't answer, usually on the arts or the ideas of society. You know all the things that, I mean, say 16th, 17th century, you know all about Luther, and you know Calvin, you know the Counter-Reformation. So you know the political or those sort of things. And nobody ever teaches you the others, and I'd like to go back and say, I want to teach those. That's where the thinking was happening.
Yes, that's right.
In the arts and in the ideas of the period.
Yes.
Not just the political.
So, as you think back on Schaefer, what would be maybe a couple of key things that come to your mind that you think were profound? Profound, not so much necessarily in what was said, but the way it was said.
I think just communicating this idea that we have to look at the roots of where a question or a statement or a movement come from. Growing up in the 60s, I've never even thought about it or going through it, but now I can afterwards begin to make sense of some of the things he said. So that was one. And the other one, the questions take people seriously. And that goes with that compassion of the dignity of human beings, and I think that was his main focus. And all the other arguments about Schaefer, yes, he was perhaps wrong in certain areas, he was weak in areas. I mean, I think I heard him once talk about economics. I don't think he knew very much about what he was talking about. But again, there was a man who wanted to grapple. And again, if people ask you the question, I give you what I know. Push you in thinking. You go and do the, if you're an economist, you go and do it. But that's look at the non-economic ideas that are driving the actual economics.
Yes. And he seemed to be able to have a very, even more of a generalist. And he had the broad ideas, he had the big picture. And then so when a question comes, it seems to me he was able to see that question in light of the big picture, which helped him to then respond. That's not just necessarily to answer the question, but to say, how are we going to think about the question?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think because he met people who were coming and said, well, what he met were with undergraduates and that sort of thing, he didn't even meet with any scholars. But I think that gave him the compassion, because he saw what they were struggling with. They weren't somebody teaching existentialism in a non-existentialist sort of institution.
Yes.
And he was seeing the fallout from some of their lectures.
Well, he was he was living in the midst of that.
That's right. Yeah.
Living here in Europe.
And I think that's what... Yes, and I think that is... I'm not sure how one would sort of talk about it, but I think that was... Yeah, well, I have to tell you that he was in Europe. I think he was quite a different shape in a way in America than he was in Europe. I mean, some people said that when he got popular and all that sort of thing, but I think some of it was just living those formative years in a formative time for Europe after the war.
Very much. So, I mean, and, of course, because he was in Europe, I think he had a unique way of seeing the States. That those of us who were living in the midst of it didn't see.
That's right, yeah.
So,
and the other one I think is a story I remember because his older daughter was married and Martin Lloyd-Jones, the great Reformed preacher out there, and I know they differed, but I think when they turned up or something, somebody said that, you know, he asked a question of, well, you know, what do you think expected to go on into the night? So I mean, he was willing to engage with people. It wasn't that he was saying, well, I've got my thing and it's...
That's what I seem to see. He comes to the individual in front of him, and he does not assume that he has the truth alone. Now, he may believe that, but that isn't what comes out in the conversation.
Right. Yeah.
He lets the other person speak and say, well, then if that's true, where will this lead us? Mm-hmm. Let's see.
And again, I mean, I was there when, I don't think I actually, perhaps at one of the conferences, actually saw them together. It was, of course, Hans Rookmacher, who in a sense was the same but very different. And I think they sparked things off with each other.
Yes, very much, I think. They learned from each
that's
other.
That's right, yeah.
And at least Hans Rookmacher, that's what he says,
yeah,
when he was inaugurated to the chair at the Amsterdam Free University. Well, Dick, this has been appreciating your coming. It's been a delightful conversation with you, most pleasant. And we shall...
Well, it's a, in the same way, Schaefer is a spiritual home for me, in a way.